My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Hello and welcome to Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers. I'm your co-host, Ethan Frisch.
And I'm your co-host, Valerie Lomas.
And this is the first episode of a new season. We're continuing to record remotely, which has its pros and cons. We miss the pizza at Roberta's, but it means we get to talk to people all over the country and who, you know, otherwise wouldn't be able to make the trip to Brooklyn. And our guest this week along those lines is Kate Sullivan, host of To Dine For on PBS, who's calling in from Chicago. Kate, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Valerie and Ethan. I wish we were at Roberta's. I love their pizza, and I know you
Seriously.
Do too.
Yeah,
but we'll make the best of it regardless.
Yeah.
So Kate, let's start off with a little bit of an introduction. What is To Dine For, and how did you come to create the show?
Well, first of all, thank you for this opportunity. To Dine For, believe it or not, starts the third season this week on public television stations across the country. And it has a super easy premise. And that is, I go with the guest to their favorite restaurant, wherever that is in the country. We eat what they love. We see where it is that they love. So we get both the food and the travel aspect. And then we let the restaurant be the backdrop for a conversation on how they created what they did. So it's a very specific guest that's on the show. It's someone who has created something out of nothing through their own imagination. So it is an author, a founder, an artist, a CEO, and it had to have been their idea. So I love the podcast, How I Built This. And I always like to say that it's how I built this with food, and it's over a fantastic meal. So that's the premise of the show. It started about 3 years ago, and we're now in our third season. It has not been an easy feat. People say, oh, that sounds like a dream job. And it absolutely is a dream job, but it has been a difficult undertaking, to say the least.
Yeah, I can imagine. Tell us some of that story. How did you come up with the idea, and what was the process like for getting it off the ground?
Yeah. So the very first time, I think I always say that the seeds of this idea have been sort of been planted for years of my life throughout my career. I was a small town reporter in small, medium, and large cities across the country. I started my television career in South Bend, Indiana, working as a local reporter on the weekends and working three other jobs, waiting tables at a deli called McCree's. I worked at the mall and I had a third job as well. And then I would become the nightside reporter in South Bend. And then my career took me to Little Rock, Arkansas, where I was a reporter and then an anchor. And then I got the call every reporter wants to have, which is to come work in New York City as the morning anchor for WCBS. And from there, I moved on to Chicago to anchor the evening news. So my career has been squarely in the midst of local news and all the good and the bad and the ugly that goes with that. And I loved it. I love storytelling. It was a very difficult career path, but I enjoyed it. And I did well. And one day I walked into work and I was fired. So I had been the anchor in Chicago for about 5 years and literally had no idea, went in and said, you know what, today's going to be your last day. See you later. And there really wasn't any reason given. It was kind of like, we're moving on. We've got other plans. And, you know, I don't know if Valerie or Ethan, if any of you have been fired, but it is a very jarring experience. And it is an experience that really kind of sets you on a whole new path, especially the way it happened to me, as you can imagine. I didn't immediately think, okay, I've been fired. Now I'm going to do To Dine For. It was a process. It was a lot of like going through the steps of grief and trying to figure out, you know, what do I want to do with my life? And I'm kind of rambling on, so please cut me off at any point.
No, I think you made such a great point about, first of all, how you have this talent and passion for storytelling and how you did it from the side of the news for so long. And I'm sure you thought, you know, that was just going to be how you spent your career.
Totally.
Happily. happily storytelling the news. Yet you still get to be a storyteller. And now you're doing it just in a different way. But I am curious, do you still get the itch? Like if there's some, you know, hot news story happening, like, I don't know, right now, mm-hmm. do you have that, that new local news or reporting the news itch ever?
Yeah. So you mean like every day of 2020 has been that day, right? I mean, right. Almost, I mean, at
don't
every
forget
moment.
2021.
And 2021. Exactly.
Don't leave it out.
It is. Actually, I'm like overwhelmingly happy that I'm not in local news over the past year. I give so much credit to the journalists that are out there every day, whether it's through the pandemic, whether it's through, you know, the rioting and the protesting. And they are, in my mind, they're my hero, you know, telling the stories. It's been, you know, this career shift that I made came down to me asking myself one question. And that was, if I could do anything I wanted in life, what would it be? What would I do?
Oh, and I love that.
Yeah. And the answer was, I would definitely want to tell stories, but what kind of stories? And I'm really fascinated by the stories of people who've created something out of nothing. People who have had an idea in whatever that form that looks like, and how did they bring it to life? And it looks so different for different people. For example, Kevin Kwan, who wrote Crazy Rich Asians. He was a creative. He was an author. He had a lot of different creative pursuits before he decided to start writing Crazy Rich Asians, which is based on his father's experience growing up in Singapore. And his father was Kevin was living in Houston, Texas, and his father was sick with cancer, and he was driving him to his treatments and his appointments. And he started to pepper this quiet man with questions, and he started to write down the answers. And that became Crazy Rich Asians, which went on to become, the number one romantic comedy in 10 years, having an all Asian cast, and really a New York Times bestselling book, and really launched his career into superstardom. And he truly created something out of nothing. So how did that happen? I'm really fascinated by that concept. And I think I firmly believe that there's nothing like sitting down with someone to a great meal in a restaurant that they love to really help someone come alive and to really showcase who they are. And so the location of the interview is in a restaurant, and it's not just because I love to eat and most people love to eat. It's because it helps to tell the story of who they are. I don't know where you two are from. Can you help me out? Where is Valerie and Ethan? Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Excellent.
Real big on food and storytelling.
Yeah, and what about you, Ethan?
Yeah, born and raised in New York City.
Okay, so if I asked both of you, where is your absolute favorite restaurant? It might be a place that reminded you of where you grew up. It might be a nod to your childhood, to your culture, to something you love, something you're obsessed with. Whatever the reason, you may take me back to Baton Rouge. My gosh, I bet there's some fabulous places that we could really throw down and have a great, great time.
Hey, listen, Kate, when you're ready.
See, already we're seeing a different side of you, Valerie, already. And food tells a story, and it really helps to tell the story of a person. And people say, oh, well, I'm not a foodie. I'm like, no. This is not about being a foodie. This is about everyone has a place they love, as a place maybe they went with their dad when they were a kid they walk in and they can still smell, you know, the smell of going back instantly takes them back to when they're 5 years old and they went in with their dad, you know, or it's a place near college growing up where they were the big man on campus and they, you know, went in and they have these fond memories of friendships from college. You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is the why. Why is the person choosing this place? And why are they so fascinated and obsessed with this place? That is the beginning of their story.
Yeah, that's amazing. Would you tell us a couple of examples? What are some of the restaurants that you've been to, and how did the restaurant play a part in that interview?
So every interview, I'm actually stunned. So the concept of the To Dine For was something that I came up with because I had a hunch. I didn't know for sure that this would actually work. I had a hunch that, you know, taking someone to their favorite restaurant would be the beginning of their story, but I didn't really know if it would work. And what I found is it absolutely does in some way. For example, one of our first episodes was with Howard Schultz of Starbucks. Probably one of the greatest business stories of our time, one of the greatest business leaders of our time. Such an intelligent, warm, elegant man who can articulate himself so well. Grew up in the projects of Canarsie, Brooklyn. People don't realize this, and literally is a real self-made man. He, his father slipped on a sheet of ice, and he was out of work and out of insurance. And that is why every Starbucks employee has access to insurance. You know, that negative experience he had as a child watching the fracturing of the American dream is why every Starbucks employee can say thank you to Howard Schultz for creating that in the company culture. He took me to his favorite restaurant in Seattle, which is Mom Noon. Now, Mom Noon is a little tiny, very wonderful, warm Middle Eastern restaurant owned by a Syrian couple with no prior restaurant experience. And the result is something very casual, something really fun, very warm. And I will tell you, I adored my time, not only at Mom Noon, but hearing Howard's story. What was the parallel between picking that restaurant and Howard? I think it was pretty clear when you watch the interview. It's that, you know, what Howard appreciated about that restaurant is the sense of hospitality that every person feels when they go in to Mom Noon. It is a place where they're transported culturally. Many of the dishes on the menu, unless you are Middle Eastern, you probably haven't heard of. And you are transported culturally and you are met with warm, a warm embrace, at least figuratively, if not literally. And you get transported. And he's hoping that Starbucks is that third location in people's lives, work, you know, home, and then a third place that people could go and really have an escape to be transported somewhere. So yeah, whether it was Howard Schultz in Seattle, whether it was Kevin Kwan in Los Angeles, he picked a restaurant called Crustacean, which was owned by this amazing Asian, a group of women who had been refugees from the Vietnam War and had created a tiny little noodle house in San Francisco called Tan Long. And it was in an old Italian deli and they didn't have any success. And they looked around and there are all these Italian restaurants and they said, gosh, they are doing great business. And that's when the Mama An had the idea to do garlic noodles. And she started making her famous garlic noodles and they became the first documented example of fusion cooking in America at Tan Long in San Francisco of these garlic noodles that became famous. And they went on to build a restaurant empire. The restaurant that we went to, that Kevin Kwan took me to, Crustacean, is a super elegant, glamorous restaurant in Beverly Hills. And I not only was Kevin Kwan's story of Asian immigrant success story magnified at Crustacean, but it was also told in a new light. And so, like, to me, I always say that's like the greatest manifestation of the show, because it really helps to explain him in a new light. You know, we could have met somewhere else, but I really understood him more by going to Crustacean, if you know what I mean.
Look, I do know what you mean. And it's so funny that you mentioned Crustacean, because I went to school in Los Angeles.
Ah.
And, yeah, and that was like the sign of like, okay, this guy really likes you.
You had made it
to Crustacean.
Yeah, like, exactly.
In like, you know, later college years, not like freshman year, but, you know, like senior year.
Yes.
That meant like, oh, this, it's on. Like,
yes. Yes. Isn't it beautiful with the, it has a live koi pond as you walk in the floor. So you're walking over this live koi pond. It is just a beautiful restaurant. They know hospitality and they know really delicious food.
Yeah. That's so fascinating, Kate. And can we actually back up a bit, because you mentioned getting fired, and I think we really kind of need to dig into that just a little bit more, especially right now, because obviously due to the pandemic and due to the, you know, many complete ways our society is in a bit of a turning point, I think a lot of people who have been laid off or who have a lot of uncertainty with their career and their career path and their future, I think it's really important for people to know people have been fired, people have been laid off, and you can actually stop and take a moment and give yourself permission to say, if I could do anything, what would it be? Yes. And the fact that you did that, I think is going to be really inspiring to people. I haven't been fired, but I did graduate into a recession, which was bad. But Ethan, have you been fired ever?
I've been fired from basically every job I've ever had. you know, I worked in a, I also graduated in a recession, worked for a foundation that lost its endowment, got laid off, worked for a restaurant that closed and got laid off, worked for a tech startup that didn't get very far, got laid off. It's a theme. Yeah.
It's a theme. Well, I will tell you what the beauty of it and the real takeaway here, because I know what you mean, Valerie, there's a lot of people out there hurting and maybe they're in the midst of a pivot themselves. I think here's the takeaway. And what has been amazing about To Dine For with all of these creators and CEOs and founders that I've interviewed is I almost called the show a fork in the road, because the truth is when people with really amazing ideas, people who are innovators, people who have stood the test of time, have always dealt with incredibly big blows in their life. And if you're listening and you haven't experienced a big blow, count yourself lucky, but know that a big blow can actually be the greatest agent of change in your life, because it allows you to reflect in a very visceral way. It allows you to put things in perspective in what you really want and what you really care about. I realized, that I love storytelling and that I wanted to continue a career in storytelling, but I wanted to do it in a different way. And I felt that what I'm doing in, you know, people say, oh, how do you feel about leaving television? And I said, well, I don't feel like I've left television at all. You know, I'm in a third season on public television of a series that I created. I've never worked so hard in my entire life to do this, but yet I'm enjoying the process more than I've ever done in my life, because you're never really like, you know, things are never really ending. You're just continuing the skills in a new direction, and you have to remember that. But it's been fascinating to listen to the stories of the guests on To Dine For and to see how they have, in fact, handled rejection, resilience, grit. Howard Schultz had 242 rejections before anyone gave him the funding for Starbucks. I interviewed Sarah Blakely, who created Spanx at her favorite restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a restaurant called Umi. And one of the funniest women, one of the most successful women, she's the youngest female self-made billionaire in the world. And she did it because she was selling fax machines door to door, and she hated it. She was good at it, but she hated it. And she said, "Cut, there's got to be a different story here. There's got to be a different ending to this movie." And she went on to invent Spanx, which is a shapewear product that women around the world thank her for. And she has made a whole lot of money in pursuit of doing something that she truly loves. So I always say, you know, the takeaway from being fired or having a really big blow is to look for the opportunity. You know, they say never let a crisis go to waste. And that is really hard in the moment, because that's not how most people react to crisis. That's not how most people react to negative situations. Most people panic, they're fearful, they're anxious, and they're angry. Right. So if you can recognize those emotions and, you know, steel yourself for the fact that even in midst of all of those emotions, and I felt the same emotions, it wasn't like I'm, you know, oblivious to them. I felt the same emotions, but to say, where is the opportunity here and how can I go in a different, better direction?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Ethan has mentioned his being laid off from every job he ever had. And, you know, for our listeners who are familiar with Ethan's story, he also recently, you know, had an ice cream business, which gets tough, you know, when you most want ice cream and you have to deal with melted ice cream. But now, I mean, I just had a meeting yesterday and everybody was talking about burlap and barrel. And I was like, hey, I know the founder. So I think I love that point about having that time for that deep reflection.
Yes.
In those moments. And
yeah. And if you keep getting fired, just start your own company so that nobody can fire
you. Well, at some point, don't you feel like, Ethan, it's nice to be sort of the captain of your own ship?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, often I feel, you know, like people say, isn't it nice to be your own boss? Often I feel like I'm my own employee and usually a disappointing employee. I'm not, I'm never performing at the level.
Me too,
that
Ethan. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I'm able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food. Our guest this week is Kate Sullivan, host and creator of To Dine For on PBS. And we were just talking about the merits of losing your job. That's pretty exciting. Kate, I did want to ask a little bit about your favorite restaurant. If you were being interviewed by you, I guess, where would you take you?
You know, there have been so many completely different times in my life, and I would choose a different restaurant to reflect each one. For example, I lived in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I'm originally from south of Boston. So if, you know, like the difference between growing up in a small town south of Boston, like Massachusetts, and then also then growing up in Little Rock is literally, I don't think you could have two extremes in this country. And so for me, like getting to Little Rock was a huge culture shock, but it was an opportunity to learn and to grow. And it was one of the greatest professional experiences of my life was being a reporter in Little Rock, Arkansas. But the second day of work, a coworker took me to lunch at a place called Your Mama's, and it was right downtown Little Rock. And you walked in and there was steam on the window, and there was chicken fried chicken, chicken fried steak, fried pork chops, cream corn, collard greens, yeast rolls, cornbread, cream gravy, brown gravy. I mean, the food was true soul food. And people would sit and they would spend a lunch like having an actual conversation. And in my, you know, rapid fire TV news career, I had never actually taken a lunch. I was very new to my career, but still I was maybe 3 years in and I'd never properly sat down. So it was a huge undertaking to understand that in Little Rock, in Southern culture, people take the time to have some lunch and to visit with each other. And that's, and to not do that is considered impolite. And people want to get to know you and they want you to share and be, you know, maybe the abrupt ways of being from Massachusetts, which had I didn't know about myself, wasn't going to fly in Little Rock. And so I needed to slow the heck down if I was going to have any success living there, working there as a reporter. And so to me, that food, that meal would speak so much to that part of my life. When I moved to New York, I had to, when anchored the news for WCBS, I had to go to bed at like 6 or 7 at night because I had to get up at 2:30 a.m. Now, you know, Ethan, that in New York City, there's no one's going to meet you for dinner at 5 p.m. There's very few people, unless you have friends who are actors, that have the time to have dinner with you. So what I did, my time in New York is marked by literally going to every fantastic restaurant in New York City by myself. Food became a hobby, my passion, my obsession. I realized that you could get into any great restaurant if you went early enough and you were willing to sit at the bar alone, because they'd always find a place for you. And so I, you know, based on that, I have so many great memories you know, it's kind of like, take a pick. Do you want to go real casual? Do you want to go down to like Pearls in the West Village and have a lobster roll and just sit there and just sit and not talk and just enjoy this amazing lobster roll? Or do you want to go, you know, high end and go to a Jean Georges restaurant and have this amazing, you know, 3 or 4 course dining experience that really signifies what it's like to have elevated dining in New York, once in a lifetime experience? I mean, we could go, I could take you a million different ways and tell you a million different stories, but they would all be accurate reflections of, you know, who I am. The truth is, I grew up in a small town, you know, with middle to lower middle class family that didn't have money to go to restaurants. But that's okay. I think it gave me an even greater appreciation when I did get involved and did start to enjoy and make the money to go out to restaurants. It kind of even heightened the experience.
I think you're making such a great point. I love that you went out to dinner alone. And I think that touches on something. Which is confidence. And the fact that you got fired, created a television show that you are the host of, creator, I'm sure you are also producing it.
Yes.
That takes confidence. And I would actually like to hear a little bit more about the process of actually creating a show. And it's not like you just created it on paper, you got it broadcast on public television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very difficult and crazy journey. And I look back and there were many times I thought I was going to give up. It was really difficult. And it was originally intended for in-flight programming on one of the airlines. And that conversation sort of dissolved, and it, you know, here I was, I had funding to create it on a platform, and then that deal fell through. And, you know, I would say the number one thing, having the idea was easy, right? Like executing it is, it's all about the execution, right? So it's about making it come to life, because ideas, everyone has ideas. It's like, do you have the courage? Do you have the confidence to pursue them? And even if you pursue them, you don't really have, you never really know if they're actually going to pan out. You know, sometimes it takes some luck. For me, it was a lot of iteration and trial and error and just trying to find the right platform to put the show on. I had a lot of meetings in New York with people like the Food Network, et cetera. And I will tell you, I had every meeting I tried to learn something from to see what they want and what they like. And I was just willing to make that call and get that meeting and walk in the door and tell them all about it and get their reaction, because every reaction is informing your next move and your next step. But yeah, it was a lot of just perseverance, I would say, Valerie. It was just, you know, I really believed in the idea. When I pitched it just as an idea, everyone was like, oh, I like that idea. Oh, I can. And they got excited about it in their own life. They could see where they would want to go. And so I knew I knew the idea was great. So it was just a matter of how do I make it happen? And the fact that the guests are all creators themselves really adds to a tone of just pure inspiration. There's a major takeaway from every single episode. Like, for example, this season that's starting this week on public television, you know, Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks takes me to his favorite restaurant, which is, wait for it, IHOP.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, he chose IHOP in Dallas, Texas, which is really funny, but also very Mark, because he actually does eat there every week. And we actually had the waitress that usually waits on him, the table where he always sits. And we had, you know, he ate what he always eats, but it was about the fact that he's this billionaire. He has very humble roots growing up in Pittsburgh. He is completely self-made. And it was the idea that he's just a regular guy and he just wants an experience where he's a regular guy. And he gets that every week at IHOP. And I love that I was able to sit down and really dive into his career and what he's learned, and to do it at a place that he felt so comfortable, because I think it comes across in the interview just how at ease he was. I've never done an interview that has felt more at ease than I did with Mark Cuban. And I have to give credit to the fact that we were sitting at IHOP.
What's his standing IHOP order?
Well, so in on To Dine For, I always get what the guest is having. So I always have what they're having. And he is one that I didn't. So he wanted an omelet and he had a very specific way he wanted the omelet. But I could not go to the International House of Pancakes and get an omelet. So I ordered blueberry pancakes.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I mean, assuming that you're hoping to continue to do interviews, that must be really hard these days. How are you adapting to COVID and the effect that it's had on the restaurant industry?
Yeah, we started with season three before the pandemic hit. So we were already in the works and it was kind of like we had to make this decision. Do we continue on in the midst of all of this? And, you know, the restaurants are superheroes these days. I mean, what they have been able to do in the most difficult conditions, in the most difficult situations, which is to soldier on, to pivot, to stay afloat, to paddle like they've never paddled in their life. I thought this was the time to dine for and to showcase them. And so we did continue on. We changed everything about how we do the show. We sourced crews locally. We shot off hours. We social distanced. We did smaller crews. We were masked when we walked in. You know, we changed a lot of different aspects of the show, but the result, I think, is the same in that the storytelling stands on its own. And yes, we had to jump through a lot of hoops to make it happen, but the stories are just as inspiring as seasons past.
That's awesome. And, you know, Kate, you said something that I just want to make sure our listeners, you know, really hone in on, which was when you went to meetings, when you were pitching the show, you went as an opportunity to learn. And I think the fear of rejection of when we do write down, you know, those deepest dreams and passions of ours, I think the reason so many of us hold on close to it is that fear of rejection. But the fact that you saw that as an opportunity to learn, I think is just really inspiring for anyone who is looking to pivot. And you know, especially in the food industry where it's it can be a little different than tech or some other industries where they're looking at, you know, the bottom line, where we're looking at things from more of a creative standpoint.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, because I will tell you, there was a time when things weren't going my way and I didn't think the show was going to happen, even though I was pitching like crazy, that I almost wrote this article called I Know Why Most People Don't Follow Their Dreams. And the reason, and this is just me, take whatever I say as a grain of salt, it's only my experience, but the reason I felt that way is because it's not just the rejection that you face, and you will get rejection, it's the intense amount of work that it really does take to bring something to life, to birth something, you know, like to birth a business, to birth a book, to create something. You know, we interview Misty Copeland of American Ballet Theatre, who went from homeless to a ballet prodigy to, you know, becoming a principal dancer at American Ballet Theatre, and like her career, you know, it's the intense amount of work. I don't know if everyone, you know, has the stomach to persevere again and again and again. And so sometimes a dream really is better as just an idea in your head. I mean, and it serves its purpose. Like I talked to someone who's always wanted to open a coffee shop, and the romance and the idea of opening a coffee shop, and, you know, every morning their schedule would be their own and they could chat with the guests and have this wonderful aroma in their coffee house. Well, anyone who's ever, Ethan, step up here. Everyone who's ever had any restaurant or coffee shop knows that is a complete fantasy.
Yeah, that you get your ass kicked.
Yes, yeah. And the work you have to put in, and the fact that you're up before anyone and you're locking up and you're dealing with, you know, things you would never imagine, you know, and it is, yeah, it's the concept of a dream versus reality. And no, it's really interesting. We could talk about it forever.
Right.
Well, I mean, we talk a lot about entrepreneurship and pivots and, you know, obviously the theme of the show. I mean, what advice would you give to somebody who's interested in making that shift, following a dream, starting a food business for the first time?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, food people are the best people. I will say that. Let's just full stop. Food people are the best people. They're,
it's true.
Yeah, they are. You know, cheers, chin, chin. They really are. So I love, you know, being a part of, being in the restaurants is my favorite part of the show. And I would never have done that had I not taken this path, you know. The guest stories are incredible. The fact we're in restaurants and we're a part of a, what I call the secondary American dream story. So the guest, you know, the story of Mark Cuban is an American dream story. But the story of the restaurants, they are American dream stories of hard work and hustle too. And they're stories where, you know, it's the one industry where regardless of where you come from, you know, whether you were born in this country, whether you weren't born in this country, whether you graduated college, high school, or ever went to school, you can still work hard and do well. And hew out a career that means something and matters. And I believe the hospitality industry does mean something and matters. It certainly has to me personally. So but that's the first thing I would say. Secondly, I would say, you know, just steel yourself for the amount of work that's ahead, and keep why you want to do it at its very core. For example, let's go back to the guy who has the fantasy of being a coffee shop owner. Let's take that one step further. Why does he want to be a coffee shop owner? If the answer is he wants to chat with people in a coffee shop, let me just tell you, there's a whole lot of other ways he could get that same effect without going through everything to own the coffee shop. So I think it's really important to distill to its very core why you're doing what you're doing. Because, you know, if the reason for me to do this show was just to be on television, I would have given up and I would have failed a long time ago. You know, I am really propelled by the actual stories and the storytelling and the creation of the show, just as much as anything. I remember when the first season got onto public television, it was like airing on a Sunday, and my husband said, don't you want to watch it? And I said, you know what? I don't have to. I've looked at that episode with Howard Schultz hundreds of times to get it right. I know what it looks like. And the boat has in the water and has set sail. And for me, it was about, you know, really at that moment, it isn't now, but at that moment, it was just about getting it on the air.
Yeah. And such a journey to be able to pull that off. I mean, sometimes it almost feels better not to watch it land because
exactly.
So much riding on it.
Exactly. And what if something goes wrong? Yeah, exactly. What if the audio, what if I missed something? I know.
Let's do a quick rapid fire segment and then we're going to wrap the interview.
Great.
If you were a vegetable, what vegetable would you be?
Well, I'm currently obsessed with butternut squash pureed with fried sage.
Mm. And why? What do you feel like butternut squash says about you?
It's kind of a silly question, so I don't really know what it says about me, but I know it's really delicious, and I always try to lead with delicious.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Do you have a journalist that you looked up to when you decided you wanted to be a journalist?
Oh, many. I mean, you know, Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, Connie Chung, Hugh Downs, Walter Cronkite, so many, and so many wonderful people when I first started in South Bend, Cindy Ward, Deborah Daniel, you know, female anchors that mentored me, that helped me, that supported me. And I have always tried to help. Television's really rough business, local news. And, you know, I've always tried to help any single person who even shows a sign. Sometimes they don't even need my help. I try to help them. So, but yeah, there's been a lot.
What is your go-to dish to cook at home? Something that you love making for yourself and your family?
I think, you know, it takes a little bit of time, but you know, for me, like a decadent Friday night is doing like a mushroom risotto and wine. Because it takes all the stirring and the wine and a lot of love and a lot of cheese, Parmesan cheese. But really, I have three boys, ages 6, 3, and 2. And I'm cooking a lot. I cook, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. So I'm cooking a lot of like roasted chicken, roasted carrots, lots of vegetables. But I would say the risotto.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. And cooking for a group of 3 little boys can't be easy.
It's not.
And we didn't even talk about how you are an amazing working mom balancing newborns as you were pitching this show.
Yeah, well, I've taken up bourbon this year, so that's like okay. My advice of 2020, and that's probably not something I should say out loud, but we started a podcast version of To Dine For called To Dine For the Podcast, and it's sponsored by a non-alcoholic bourbon called Spiritless, and they've been wonderful to us, and I had never had bourbon before. I'm like, how can I have them as a sponsor if I don't even know what real bourbon tastes like? So I've tried to like, I try to buy a different type of bourbon every time I go to the store. And my husband is like, enough with the bourbon. Okay, let's switch back to wine.
I guess one last question. Obviously, you have interviewed some amazing guests, but is there any one person that you would like to interview for your show that you haven't been able to land yet?
Oh, great question. Yes. I think there's a lot of people. It's so interesting. Like, you never know until you sit down with someone how the conversation's going to go. But people that are, you know, in the creativity, innovation space, like, of course, Elon Musk comes to mind as someone who would be incredible to interview. What I've found is that I really enjoy the people in the creative space the most. So I loved my interview with M. Night Shyamalan, writer, director of, you know, The Sixth Sense and Glass and Split. I loved my conversation with him. People like Ashley Longshore, an artist, you know, authors, people who live a rich inner life and, you know, really just have fun with food. I think when someone can really enjoy the food as much as the conversation, I know they're my kind of people.
Yeah, well said. Kate, where can our listeners find out more about you and your work, watch To Dine For, follow you on social media?
Sure, thank you. So To Dine For starts on public television this week. So check your local listings for the new episodes. Season 1 and 2 are right now available on Amazon Prime. So if you go into Amazon Prime and look for To Dine For, and then our podcast, which started in September, has been really fun. And that is in Apple, Stitcher, and it's just called To Dine For.
Awesome. Well, thank you for listening. Thanks to our brand new sound engineer, Armin, for doing a great job on our first episode together. Thanks to the Red Crickets for our theme song. As always, you can reach us by email, whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org. You can follow us on social, whyfoodpodcast. You can reach me via my spice company, Burlap and Barrel, at Burlap and Barrel on Instagram.
And you can follow me on Instagram at Foodie in New York.
And most of all, thank you to Kate for joining us. Such a fun conversation, a great way to kick off our new season.
This has been a blast. Thank you both. It's wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks. We'll have a great day. Yes. All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Why Food is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage.